Group meeting, Sunday, 23rd January, 1977. You have already, during these years, heard the word consider used in a way which is not restricted to the ordinary dictionary meaning of the word consider. This word is a very important word. If we go into the depths of its real meaning, as I would say, its transcendental meaning. Let us remind ourselves, it is related to, if not directly derived, actually its derivation is a bit uncertain, but the word consider consists of two parts, con, meaning with or together with, Latin, and sidus, sideris, a star. I would like you to listen in the purely considering manner. Now, what is a star? A star is a self-shining light. It shines from within itself because of the nature of its life process. So, this shining from within itself is the important point in connection with the word consider. To consider means, therefore, in its profound sense, to look intently. Just look intently into the self-shining light. Now, look intently into, not merely at, the self-shining light. And the sort of self-shining light which distinguishes a star is also characteristic of the true human. We too, in our actuality, which is still a potentiality, but in our actual being, we are self-shining lights. Associate this word with the way in which man, the idea of man has been presented in the great scriptures. For instance, if you refer to the Trismegistic writings, you will find it said, and then All-Father Mind created man, his child, and fell in love with him because he was so like his sire. Now, if this ultimate creative energy, the supreme ultimate reality that we as human beings can conceive of, created man who was like himself, that creative energy is necessarily the self-shining light. That is what we are. If you look into the Upanishads, you will find that extraordinary statement. In the beginning, there was only the Atma. The Atma is the absolute, ultimate creative energy of the universe. Putting it in non-personalistic terms, subjective terms if you like, Atma, looking around and seeing nothing other than himself, said, "I am." Then the Upanishad goes on to show how the proliferations emerging out of Atma gave rise finally to man, manushya, creatures with intelligence. Manushya, man, mind. Not just mind in our very dim, restricted human sense of the word, but mind in its profound sense, that creative energy which produces cosmos out of chaos. And remember that chaos, in its original true meaning, is this creative energy in vibrant quiescence. Cosmos, which emerges out of chaos, is this same creative energy in terms of vibrant manifestation and activity. So, we come to what we find in Genesis, first chapter. And then Elohim said, "Let us create man in our own living image." If Elohim, the creative energy of the universe, is the creative power, obviously it itself is a self-shining light. And it created man, male, female, in his own, in its own living image. So you see, we are self-shining lights. When we consider, therefore, it is that self-shining light within us which is the fundamental, the perpetual considerer, it's the one who considers. Now, what could be the implications of that kind of consideration? Obviously, it is not argumentative. It is not a musing which is just a churning in our own brains. I purposely say brains rather than mind. A churning in our own brains of concepts, beliefs, conceptions, and their expression in words. It is not that. It is not just music. It is not... not musing. It's not just musing. It is not a mere meandering without any true expression of this original creative energy. It itself, considering, is itself a creative process. It is a process which does not create in the sense of throwing out something merely. It is a process in which the being, the living being, is livingly expressed. The word expression ordinarily means throwing out of something expressing, pressing out of. Now, I've said these things because it links up very intimately with one of the main elements in the discipline of the religia. Whoever he is, be he Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Zarathustrian, Jewish, anybody. That aspect of the discipline, which we term mindfulness, or as put in the New Testament, watchfulness, watch and pray. You see? This true mindfulness is this kind of considering, where the observation, which involves looking at, this observation transforms into a creative process within, through, because of the activity of the self-shining light, which is pure consciousness, in which pure consciousness our ordinary discriminative consciousness is subsumed. Because we ordinarily function in terms of discriminative consciousness, we are always looking at or listening to or touching something else. There is always the element of otherness. Otherwise, there is no discrimination. You see? This is the great mystery and the marvel of this activity of the mind, which is embodied in us, of pure mind, the divine mind, if you like to so term it, which takes place continuously. And it is the principle, the key element, if you like, in the life of the religia. So you see what mindfulness, watchfulness implies. Consider this carefully. You can consider it carefully if the surface activity of mind, which is represented through the activity and takes place through the activity of the brain, is quiet. This is important. Now, what is the significance of this activity of the brain being quiet? The brain is filled with all sorts of concepts, ideas, experiences, and all the sense impressions that come to it. The brain is the mechanical synthesizer of all these things. The brain is part and parcel of the mystery which is mind. The brain is no mystery. It is the concretest expression, the materialization of mind. What we call thought is just matter. It is not immaterial. It is matter, in fact. So now the brain is all this. And because it is filled in this manner, it is conditioned, it is limited, it is unawake and unaware of its limitations and its restrictions and its restrictive influence. Therefore, we are confused, we are in conflict, we are naturally organism-oriented, self-oriented, all the time. And this obstructs this self-shining light, this eternal, infinite, immeasurable, universal divinity. Not my spirit, there is only one spirit. We can't possess the spirit, or the Atma, or whatever we call the ultimate reality within us. So you see, the brain obstructs that. Now it obstructs it because the brain is continuously active. As long as the body is there, the brain is alive. The brain is also alive. This is one reason why even in sleep we have dreams. There is a process going on automatically in the brain. So pure mind gets veiled. It is as if a fog had spread through what is actually perfect transparency, perfect light, perfect, the state of perfect enlightenment. We have to appreciate this, really appreciate it. When we have dreamless slumber, which means that the activity of the brain has become a quiescent vibrating, because whilst it is alive, it is active, it is vibrating. When it has become a quiescent vibrating, then pure mind functions unobstructedly through the organism. The organism is completely at ease. It is in a state of harmony. The breath rhythm, which is your own individual unique life rhythm, is in tune with the universal life rhythm. Then there is no obstruction to this, what we sometimes call divine mind or pure mind or the essence of mind, as Buddhism puts it, and so forth, from functioning unobstructedly and freely through the living organism. That is why, in that state of sleep, the organism is refreshed, recharged with vital energy. And it starts, when it wakes up, renewed. There is a creative renewal which takes place. And this is a truly creative renewal. But because it happens in deep slumber, there is that break between the realization of what is the true purpose of our existence, or one of the true purposes of our existence. There is a break between that and the ordinary waking state consciousness. So you see, this quiescence becomes supremely important. The quiescence does not mean being static. It does not mean that one has become a fossil. We are truly alive, truly ourselves. Not a bit of our experience and knowledge, etc., is lost by the brain. But all that experience and all that knowledge is understood in its real sense. There is complete understanding. As I said a little earlier, there is the state of enlightenment. Now the problem is to be free of this break between the enlightened state of the dreamless slumber and the unenlightened, confused, conflicting state when we are awake. Now, this is where the discipline of the senses comes in to its own. What is the discipline of the senses? Let us remind ourselves that the word discipline does not mean to control deliberately by the brain that which should happen naturally and spontaneously. the suppression of the senses, the repressing of the senses, the judgments for or against the sense functions and the way they function and so forth, and our reactions to them, all that has to be out. The brain has to be the pure instrument of observation. That is to say, it is like a receiving set which is extraordinarily sensitive, supremely sensitive. The brain has to become that. And it becomes that through our own intelligent use of the senses. When we see in our waking state an object or a person, are we really seeing that object, that person? What are we seeing? Consider, here there are several objects in this room, there are several people in this room. Look at anyone you like. Look at any object you like, you see, or whatever you're looking at. And you, the brain says, oh, that's a piano, that's a wall, that's a candle, there's a chair. This is so-and-so, and that person is so-and-so, and so forth. The name is pronounced in the brain, and the person or the object is more or less dismissed by the concept in one's own brain. There is a dismissal of the actual reality which is vibrating, functioning in this living moment. You have heard me say this sort of thing before, but it can never be repeated too often. It's very, very important. That dismissal takes place. If that dismissal takes place, there is a sundering of the wholeness of all existence, the holiness of the universe. We talk very glibly about the one total reality, or that everything is transcendence embodied, or of the omnipresence of God, but we just do not function or let ourselves function that way. This dismissal is the act of sin, of separation. The moment I have cut myself off from any object, from any person, I am in the state of sin, the sundered state. It's the literal meaning of the word sin. In the sundered state, I am no longer allowing the self-shining light, which is the supreme potentiality within this organism, to be the self-shining light. This is very important. This implies, therefore, that I have to learn anew. And the word discipline means nothing but learning. And we cannot learn anything at all if we cling to our mental fixations, to the blocks within our own brains. The words in the language are often unconsciously extraordinarily accurate. We use the word, oh, blockhead, and we say he's a blockhead. Yes, indeed, he's a blockhead. We are all blockheads to some degree or other, absolutely constricted, restricted by our conditioning and our clinging to the conditioning. The clinging to our desires, our thoughts, our beliefs, because they satisfy us perhaps, because they are our beliefs, they are our image, we say in the world. And everybody says, oh, I am such and such a TV star, I have to preserve the image of myself. I am such and such a lecturer, I am such and such a road sweeper, I've got to preserve the image of myself. As the very thing that shuts out the living reality, which is the unknown and unknowable supreme. Thou shalt not worship any gods or make images of thy gods. Why that commandment? Think of it. You see how profound the religious teachings actually are. All right. So now this is the, I'm putting it very briefly, the nature of our seeing, of our looking. It is not a real seeing. We are looking at an image. And that in us which is looking is itself an image already. The I concept, I am looking. I have an image of myself in my mind. I don't know myself. When, as and when I really know myself, in the true meaning of that phrase, knowing myself, all selves are known. Because in true self-knowing, there is no other self. The whole universe becomes the one self. And my own isolative self-consciousness no longer obtrudes on that unity, that unitary wholeness, which is pure holiness. So we start here. You look at an object. Be aware of the disturbing activities of the brain. It is analytical. It names the thing. Not that the analysis is false. Constituted as we are and functioning within the context of our nature as such, as an animal species, we do go through these processes. Nature has made the organism that way, and therefore we do go through these processes. But now, look quietly and calmly at any object or person. Be aware of these disturbances, and you will find that the disturbances will calm down. And then, you are seeing a wall, you are seeing John Bright or whoever you are looking at, but the wall and John Bright and the rose and the earth and the stream, everything begins to be seen in a new way simultaneously. Why? When this, which is the disturber, myself, the brain, has ceased to disturb, then the one self-shining light, which is transcendence itself, is seeing through my eyes. The eyes of the organism show the separate object or person to me, but the eyes of transcendence see the actuality, the truth. This is the meaning of the word truth in the religious context. It's the context of transcendence. The eyes of transcendence see the whole truth of that object or person. Transcendence sees itself embodied through your eyes, listens to its own music through your ears. This is very important. So much for that. This is easy enough to understand. But where our greatest struggle, our greatest difficulty comes, is inside our own brains. When we are not talking with anybody, or listening to anything, or touching, or doing something, and an activity starts up in the brain. In fact, it always goes on in the hinterland of the mind, which is an activity representing the upsurgence, the riotous upsurgence of all the impressions that have been stored up in the organism from infancy onwards. Whilst you are cooking, there's a tune going on in your mind. or you are thinking of this problem or that problem, or undergoing such and such feelings and emotions, disturbances all the time, this activity within never stops, excepting when one is enlightened, when one is utterly purified and liberated. This goes on. Now, you may say, oh, but surely there's nothing wrong. Lovely music goes through my mind, or poetry, or exalted thoughts and sublime emotions and all the rest of it. Yes, yes, true, it's all very exalted and sublime. But look at it. It is oriented to me, towards me, the separate self. And as for the ill things, well, there's no need to press the point. They are ill things, and we know that all the time. So you see, we discover how completely self-oriented we are, and how not the reality of self we are. The reality of self being the totality, without a second, and yet not unaware of the multitudinous variety which composes that unitary wholeness. This happens particularly when one is alone by oneself. When you wake up in the night, what goes through the mind? Straight away, you toss and turn and toss and turn, wanting to go to sleep, perhaps, wanting to be free of the particular fear or the problem or the disharmonious situation in which you are placed, and so forth. All this goes on. Now, don't struggle, don't fight against it. It's a heaven-sent opportunity just to be able to say, this is what is happening. And if you look at the struggle, if you look at the evil, if you look at the disease of the mind, of the psyche, I should say, not the mind, and psyche is personal and individual, mind is universal and pure. If you look at that disease, then that kind of looking, the right kind of looking, heals the psyche. Mind doesn't need healing. The psyche, which is personal, which is intimately bound up with the physical organism and all our worldly experiences and our state of ignorance and our passions and our desires and all the rest of it, it is that which needs the healing. Recall the old myth, Psyche and Eros. We've often talked of it. Psyche, the mortal, when after purification through suffering and so forth, ultimately finds Eros again, and their nuptials are celebrated in Mount Olympus. But the mortal cannot marry an immortal. But because the mortal is purified, the gods confer immortality upon Psyche the mortal. So you see what happens. The psyche, because of its purification, enables pure mind to function freely. And then you are the living, self-shining light, the focus point, so to say, of the universal light. These are nice phrases, these are perhaps stirring words and all the rest of it. Or, of course, if you have that kind of very matter-of-fact mind, you'd say, what waffle? And you wouldn't be wrong, you see. These are not mere words, though. If they were mere words, this kind of speaking, if it was mere talking, it wouldn't live. But look at your scriptures. They all have presented this kind of thing. And they are the things which have outlived all the novels and stories and chit-chat and whatever else has been spoken and written throughout the ages. They have lived in a curious way. even though some of them are beyond our comprehension at present. When, for instance, these exalted moods and memories all crop up, remember that they are due to our pleasure drive. It's nice to recall that lovely Beethoven quartet or that marvelous Titian that I saw in the National Gallery and so forth, or that wonderful day I had with my boyfriend or girlfriend and so forth, you see. These are all very pleasant. It's the pleasure drive. Don't forget that. So you see, even if you recall and try to live in the deep states of consciousness which you have realized through meditation under certain magical circumstances, wonderful circumstances, if you try to recall that, you are seeking the pleasure you obtained for yourself. That is why no grasping at all at anything whatsoever. And then you are truly considering continuously and perpetually in your waking as well as your sleeping state. You are truly mindful then. It seems to me as if here, as far as words can go, we have touched the limit of communicating the incommunicable.